Church family, you can be seated and turn, if you would, to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. And we are going to look at a big, long passage of Scripture here that we will summarize with one verse. It'll be verse 25. And then we'll get going into our new series. And it's my hope that what we're going to do is we're going to discover, and maybe some of you have come across this too, you've been in the doctor's office and you have been at a specialist's office, and then they referred you to another specialist, and eventually you went back to your own doctor, and then you said, none of these doctors know anything, and then you went on the internet doctor, and you looked up WebMD, and you started to do your own research, and you just could not come up with what was the cause of the frustration and the medical complications that you've been facing, and it went on and on and on. You know what I'm talking about? Eventually you ended up getting supplements at Costco, and you thought, this ought to do it. If this doesn't do it, I'm calling it quits. And then eventually somebody says to you, we think we've got it. We think we've got it solved. Here's what it is. This virus, this bacteria, this dislocation, this condition, this syndrome, this is what we're going to do for the next 8 weeks, is we're going to look at what God describes in the Scriptures as the cause, the culprit, the source of all of the hurts and the bad habits and all the hang-ups and all of the dysfunction and all the colliding and misery and depression and discouragement that most of the human race is struggling through. And we're going to discover that there's a cause for it, and it's probably not what you expect. It's not the Democrats, it's not the Republicans. And God is going to diagnose this for us right here in the Scripture. If you're a guest with us or you're new to the Christian faith, our messages come out of the Bible. We believe the Bible is authoritative, it is inerrant, it is reliable, and it is indeed words that have been inspired by God, who has described himself, has revealed himself, and his truths don't change. They're not absolute based on whether I prefer them or I don't. And we rest in that, we preach that and teach that, and we allow it to really nourish our souls. So we'll be in Romans chapter 1, technically verses 18 to 32. So I hope that you take some time to read through this on your own. I'm sure you will. Verses 18 to 32, primarily we're going to be looking at this verse. It's verse 25. And it goes like this. I'm not sure if we have the slide for it, but it's real simple. If you have a Bible, you can turn there. Romans 1:25, and there it is, like magic or preparation. Here we go. Romans 1:25. They, meaning all the people who were facing all kinds of discouragement, depression, and incredibly, an incredible amount of dysfunction, all of them. Here's what they did. They traded the truth about God for a lie, so they worshiped and served the things God created instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. So you see what Paul's saying? They've got some major life issues. They're facing all kinds of destruction in their life, and here's what they did. They traded. They were worshiping the things that God created instead of the Creator, capital C, who made those things. They gave their hearts to them. And we're going to look closely today at this big idea that we need the awe of God to recapture, refocus, and redirect our hearts. How many times? Again and again and again. That's what we need. That's what the doctor in heaven, the great physician, has ordered for our hearts. Here's what he prescribed. We need the awe of God to recapture, refocus, and redirect our hearts again and again. I often think of words, just single words that have lasted and have kind of endured the test of time. And one of those words that still, it blows my mind. I mean, you know, there's words that haven't lasted, right? You remember, some of you are old enough to remember the word like groovy and the expression far out. Do you remember those? Some of you remember what they were saying, what the Flintstones were saying. I don't remember what those words were. But then eventually you get these kind of like these generational words. They come and go. I remember in the 80s, all of my friends used to use this word decent. Decent. And that went away so fast, thank God that went away. But we used it all different possible ways, all different ways you could possibly emphasize or accent one parts of it. And one word that's lasted over time is the word cool. That's still as cool as ever to say. But there's one word that seems to have really, it's the king. The king of descriptive words that seems to have endured all time is the word awesome. Have you noticed that? I had a friend of mine who used to get real irritated when his kids would say awesome because they would say, that's not awesome, God is awesome. And I would think, geez, imagine living with that person. What a nightmare. I would just say, I mean lowercase awesome. I mean uppercase awesome. Leave me alone. Even the Lego movie, everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. The word awesome is still a major part of our vocabulary, and we are going to use this word, we are going to define this word, and this word, listen to this, is going to take us through an 8-week series. The series called Awe. It is a root of the word awesome. The word awesome would be, it would mean this, inspires awe. There is some level of awe in what I'm saying. And what we're going to discover is that if you know the scriptures and the way that God has revealed us, not everything is awesome. Now, everything is cool if you're part of a team, but not everything is awesome. The Lego movie soundtrack, it's lying to you, kids. But we have to start somewhere, and here's where we're going to start. You have this in your notes. God created an awesome world. Awesome. The word awe. You see, you've got some parentheses there. The word awesome. We have to define that, because when you use a word in a culture over and over and over again, it kind of means different things to different people. So let's define that. The word awesome. What does it mean? The word awe. Let's use the word awe. This is what it means. It's whenever your heart is filled with astonishment and delight. When you have something in your heart and it's filled and you're astonished and you're delighted and you're thrilled, that's the definition of the word awe. It takes you back. Around here we use the word adore, right? We adore God, we adore things, we have what we would call like the desires or the affections of our heart are aimed at something. So the word awe means that, God has loaded the world with awesome things. Things that he intentionally loaded the world up with, and he did so to amaze us and to astound us, to thrill our hearts, to delight our hearts, and also to give us a clue as to there is an awesome God who has created and filled the world with awesome things. I still remember being in college, looking out on the balcony when I was going to school in Tulsa, and something very unique to me, being from the upstate New York region, when I got down south and all you mixed all the dryness and humidity and some of the other kind of storm patterns, occasionally we would be able to stand on our balcony and we would watch a blistering thunder and lightning storm that never made it to the ground. It was in a cloud. And you'd see the lightning flashing like a pyrotechnics show, and you would hear this thunder booming shortly after you saw the lightning, and it's all happening in the clouds. And I love the seasons of Central New York, and one of my favorite things to do is go apple picking and get a Granny Smith right off the tree. I only pick them when they're in season and we're allowed to. I never cross over the other rows and pick apples that I'm not supposed to be at. But there's something about a fresh, cold snap and tartness of a Granny Smith. Any Granny Smith fans in here? Everyone else, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. It is the... And these things that I'm describing, the tartness of a Granny Smith apple, also, by the way, inside the apple, you've already noticed this, my parents lied to me about what happened to the seeds. If you eat the seeds, what they would say is that it would grow a tree out of your face. You would start down here and then out of your face, so avoid the seeds. I want to deal with that. But how amazing, right? You have the actual meat and nourishment of the apple. Inside the apple is some seeds. in order to perpetuate the apple tree, in order to perpetuate the actual fruit itself. And these are the experiences, just two very, very small experiences of the awesomeness of the world. And some of you, you've got so many others, and you have probably breathed in a lot of the awesomeness that God has created in our world. But the truth is, there are thousands of other created sights and sounds and touches and tastes that God has created to inspire us and satisfy us. But most of us, many of us, there's maybe a handful of people in your own home who are not inspired but are dissatisfied, who are not breathlessly observing the world that God has created. Instead, you're chronically bored. And that boredom has led to all kinds of anxiety and maybe some personal misery. But the truth is that we have in our hearts a deep dissatisfaction. It's in our souls. It's an emptiness that we all long to fill, and we are attracted to and chasing awesome experiences, things that delight our heart. God has filled the world with those things, and he has given us a capacity. It's in your notes. God has created us with an awe capacity, meaning we are able to take in the things that God has created for us to see and adore and to be astonished by. The people that are in the Roman church, they know the truth about God because he has made it obvious to them. He, in fact, listen to this, people have seen, right? They've seen, they could see, they could picture. They can clearly see, it says in the text in verse 20, the world had been created by God and he made it obvious. People have seen the earth and sky. They can clearly see. What does that mean? God has not just created awesome things in the earth, but he's given us the capacity to perceive them. Don't you love the five senses that God gave us? Think about that. What if God would have created what he created and we didn't get the five senses? Talk about frustrating. Who knows what that would be like? Who could even imagine what that would be like? But God has given us five powerful awe gates to see and perceive the awesome things that God has created. We can hear beautiful music. We can tell the difference between good music and noise. We can see the details of color and texture and shape. We can see things that are moving and they're not blurry because our eyes are built in such a way as to be able to perceive things without them being blurry. Well, most of us, I mean, at least we started with eyes like that, right? We can feel and touch things. Soft, wet, hard, sharp, cold, smooth, silky, and bumpy. We can taste things, salty and sweet and sour and peppery and hot and cold and so on because of our taste buds. We've been created to actually perceive the things that God has created to inspire us to astonishment. God made us capable of taking in what signals that he is sending us. And he did not strand us. And we not only desire awe in our lives, we have the capacity to interact with those things. And this is so important. Here, see if you can grab this. God designed everything. Everything he designed, everything he created, to be awesome enough to capture our heart's deepest affections for him. That's why he created it. He wanted to advertise that he's glorious and that he's fulfilling and that he's delightful. And here's what we discover. Number one, in your notes, every one of us, are in a daily and lifelong pursuit of awe. You probably didn't know this. This may catch you off guard. You may not even agree with this, but from the minute we open our eyes, our senses are clamoring to be filled daily and for a lifelong length of time to pursue things that fill our heart. Some of you have already discovered that within minutes after waking up, your heart needs coffee. Have you discovered that yet? Your heart needs to delight itself in the beautiful coffee beans that God has provided. We get up in the morning and without being aware of it, we're constantly searching for awe. And that's why some people love to drive fast cars. Some people love to eat in fine restaurants and eat the best foods. That's why some of us go to state parks and art museums and festival concerts or arena stadium concerts. And some people go to sporting games, playoff events, and watch them on television. Why does that hold our hearts? Why does that attract us? Why do we hike through the Adirondacks? Here's why. Because you and I are in a daily and lifelong pursuit of the things that awe our hearts. That's what we're doing, and that's why we do it. And that's what all people share in common. Here, listen to this. We are hardwired for awe. We are created that way. When you have, some of you are car people, when you see that car, it's got those lines, you see that motor, you sit in that luxury seat, you put your hand on that standard shift that you know has got access to all the power in the engine, and you just get swallowed up and you say, this is awesome. Or if you're like me, you say, this is decent. So decent. Here's what it is. We're hardwired to enjoy that. We're hardwired. We shouldn't feel guilty about that. We should be recognize that we are hardwired. And this is true. If you think about the little boy who's saving up his piggy bank money because he wants the latest pair of Air Jordans, what in the world would draw someone to the latest pair of Air Jordans? It's no different than the an adult who is saving up all of their money to make sure that their child can go to college, and no different than somebody who's investing their money as a successful business entrepreneur and wants to succeed. The teenage girl who's going to prom is as much on a quest for awe as the woman shopping for the house of her dreams. The athlete who reaches for fame seeks the same, is looking for the same treasure as the man who yearns for the perfect wife and he dreams of a family. He's being drawn to the beautiful things that God has created for us. We're hardwired for it. It's daily and it's lifelong. But there's a problem. Of course there's a problem. It's not that easy. There's always a problem. It's not that simple. It doesn't go the way that God planned it to go. Even though we're hardwired for awe, there is a war that's happening. When my family and I were at the Veterans Memorial Cemetery on Memorial Day, I got in a little conversation with my oldest son, and I was talking to him about the significance of World War II. And I was trying to point out to him that these soldiers, men and women, service men and women, had some of them given their life in World War II, and that if they did not, that it's quite possible that they would be living in some version of Japan or Germany, and that the war that was being fought was catastrophic, and it had ultimate consequences, right? And we're mindful of that as we consider our country and we consider the fight for freedom, that it costs lives. But let me throw this out there, not to minimize the lives that were spent and the blood that was spilled to secure and protect our freedom. But the scriptures describe a war that is occurring that has far more consequences, because it isn't a consequence that has to do with the way that the nations of the earth are drawn up and the people groups are organized. It has to do with the eternal destination of our soul. And what the scriptures teach us here, what the Apostle Paul is teaching the Roman church is this. He's teaching that there's another war that is taking place. And the level of this significance of this particular war, eternity is at stake. And here it is. It's the war to win the awe of our hearts. Imagine a cosmic tug of war for that which our hearts are going to adore. That which our hearts are going to be thrilled by and fascinated by and astonished by. Number two, we're facing a war over what our heart worships and what our heart serves. And this war is ongoing, and this war is going back and forth. Look at verse 23. And instead of worshiping the glorious, the ever-living God, they worshiped idols. See the war? Instead of worshiping the ever-glorious and or the ever-living and glorious God, instead, here's what they did. They settled for, their hearts settled for idols. things that were created, things that are good, but they're not God. And what Paul describes is this war is being waged in our hearts, and it's going on, and it's daily, and it lasts a lifetime, but there is a legit, full-fledged war that is happening. And these people, here's what they did. This is why their lives got off track. This is why they were derailed. This is why they fell off the rails. Because they traded the truth about God for a lie. So they worshiped and served the things God created instead of the Creator himself. And see, what happened is they lost the war that was being waged for their hearts. And when we try to raise our kids, we want our kids to adore Jesus, but we have to be careful that we don't just tell them that the world is bad and there are terrible consequences for the counterfeits, but we have to, we mentioned this I think maybe last week, that we win them over to taste and see that God is good. And ultimately, he's satisfying. What we're doing is we're introducing them to the ways in which they win the war. Sin separates us from the Creator. Our capacity for awe kind of gets kidnapped by everything and anything other than God. And most humans, this is certainly not scientific, of course, but in my opinion, in my observation, most humans are losing the war in the heart for what they adore. What awe has filled their hearts. So, and obviously, there's something that has gone drastically wrong, and here it is. In our God forgetfulness, here's what we've done. We have promoted ourselves to the center. That's what we've done. Look at the word promoted. We promoted ourselves. We have shifted. We have moved ourselves to the center. We have made ourselves the middle of our lives, and we have it. This is what the author in our supplemental study calls all wrong. We have it all wrong. Not all wrong, we have it all wrong. A-W-E, wrong. It's all wrong, which means our hearts, what gratifies us and what satisfies us, what astonishes us, is not the Creator, but instead it is anything and everything else. Here's how the author describes it, Paul Tripp. He says, it's all wrong whenever we put ourselves or the creation in the place where God alone is to be. When we do that, when we promote ourselves to the center of our own lives, then we have gotten it all wrong, and it's going to go bad, and it's going to go painfully bad. Now, this all started with Adam and Eve. You probably remember, if you're familiar with the Bible and you know the story of the Garden of Eden, here's Adam and Eve, been created by God. They're in perfect union with the Father who created them. No sickness, no disease, no pain, no anguish, no sorrow, no suffering. Perfect union with the Father who created them. They couldn't be more gratified or satisfied in the way that God had given them everything, including giving them himself. But what happened? It wasn't enough. They promoted themselves to the center of their life. And despite the fact that there was no sin, suffering, or sickness of any kind, they were living in paradise. When they decided, they were given by the serpent the option to cross the boundary, and they were given the option because the serpent said to them, of course, is that what God really said? What if you could position yourself at the center of your own life? What if you could take God's position in your own life? And of course, we know what happened. They did it. Everything shattered to pieces. And they step over those boundaries, and they promote themselves to the center of their own lives. And this is the dangerous fantasy that lurks in our own heart and in the heart of every sinner. And that is this, that we want God-like recognition, we want God-like control and power and God-like centrality in our own lives. And when we don't have it, some of us even panic, and some of us lash out at people, and some of us work extra hard and take shortcuts and also compromise in order to get all of that back because, here's why, because we have promoted ourselves to the center of our own lives. And this was the initial moment when the awe of self overrode the awe of God and set the brand new agenda for every person's thoughts, desires, and all of our choices, and all of our behavior. And it started then. It started with Adam and Eve. Awe wrong was unleashed on the earth, and with it became this war for the heart of every human being. And there isn't a day in your life or mine that passes without us dealing with the results of this story. Every single event now, this has made everything harder. It's made everything more dangerous, everything more painful. The results of getting it all wrong has brought major trouble into your personal life. That's what's wreaking havoc on your marriage, your relationships. That's what is wreaking havoc on your parenting, and it makes it exhausting. It lies at the bottom of our human jealousy and our conflicts and our personal conflicts, our public conflicts, our global war and conflict around the world. It makes the delight of food, money, and sex so dangerous because we've made ourselves the center and we've gotten it all wrong. So let's talk about how we fix this. Let's talk about really quick how we fix this. If you're still with me, we're going to talk about how we fix this. We need the awe of God to recapture and to refocus and to redirect our hearts again and again. And here's what he has done. God has created, everything God has created, listen to this, he created to point us to himself, to point us. Everything he's created has been created to point us to the Creator. Verse 19 and 20, they know the truth about God because he has made it obvious to them. Look at 20. For ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky. Through everything God made, they can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power, and his divine nature. See, people can see God because he has created things to point to himself. And he's constantly trying to get our heart's attention and to be sure that we don't celebrate the signs, but the signs point us to the one who created all things. We took a day trip recently to Tinker Falls. Did you even know there was such a thing as Tinker Falls right in the upstate New York area? Did you even know you could name a falls Tinker? You didn't even know? I had no idea. We had a great time. It's a great, short, reasonable, no fighting in the vehicle on the way up or back trip. I highly recommend it. Beautiful little falls right down in the I think it's Truxton, Lafayette, Tully area. And along the way, before you get to the falls, you get to the sign, Tinker Falls. And then if you're like me, you look at it again, you say, could that possibly be Tinker? Tinker Falls. And listen to this. How ridiculous would you think it is on the way to Tinker Falls to see a family gathered around the sign, Tinker Falls, with their arms around the sign, and everybody, they're taking a selfie around the sign. Each person, one at a time, with the sign. They start to kind of smooth the dirt out around the sign to make sure that it's nice and neat and clean for the next people who come up to see the sign, right? It's ridiculous. Especially if you go to Tinker Falls and you're there for an hour and you never see that family. They never make it. Because they somehow got sidetracked by really adoring the sign rather than them letting the sign just say, no. This is, keep going. Because you're going to like the sign, but you're going to love the falls. Right? And this is exactly what God has done in all of creation. He has made signs, and all the things that you and I experience with our five senses, they're just signs to say there's a creator who made those things. Don't stop here. Don't celebrate and adore the signs. Adore the creator who the signs are pointing to. And there's so many ways in which that we miss this. There's so many ways in which that we just don't get this right. There's so many ways in which this makes our lives so much more complicated. You are meant by these signs to be inspired and to celebrate the awesome things that came from the Creator's hand. And don't forget that there's no awesome thing that was meant to give you what only the Creator can give. Every awesome thing in creation is designed to point you to the one who alone is worthy of capturing and controlling the awe of your searching and hungry heart. And the failure and the hurt that has swallowed some of our lives is but a symptom. Listen, it's just a symptom of our hearts having gone all wrong. That we are finding our heart's delight in something else. So let me see just a couple of things here before we finish. Let's look specifically at what we can do. Here's what we can do. Look for awe wisely, because if you don't look for awe wisely, it will damage your life. In some cases, destroy your life. Some people, this has destroyed their lives, not just damaged it. And Paul describes this, that these people, by the way, who were doing this, who were trading the things, that were worshiping the things God created instead of the Creator, their lives became full of every kind of wickedness. Verses 28 and 29. Every kind of sin, greed, hate, envy, murder, quarreling, deception, and malicious behavior, and gossip. You could argue that every horrible thing, do you all still let yourself watch the news? Do you? I know I mention this regularly, but if you still let yourself watch the news, imagine this. Everything that you see that is breathtakingly horrible has its roots in getting it all wrong. Every news story you read about murder this week has its source in all wrong. Every time your dad or your mom or your spouse has ever physically or verbally lashed out at you, or God forbid, sexually abused someone or you, it rose up out of a heart that had gotten it all wrong. Who had begun to worship and adore something other than the God who deserves it, the glorious ever-living God. Every moment of violence has its roots in all wrong. Every act of terrorism or needless political violence, it's unleashed because of all wrong. Their lives were full of all kinds of wickedness. Now, some of you are students, and some of us might think, well, why in the world would these good kids at these great schools take shortcuts and compromise? And I think this too when I hear about a student athlete who throws away their scholarship for a little marijuana, and I say, oh, why would anybody ever do that? Why would you throw away your entire college career? And of course, there's far more worse things, but that just comes to mind. And what would cause someone to do this except that they adore success, they adore recognition, they adore rewards, so they cheat on their exams and on their projects? Or they are somehow addicted or adore the laziness, and they adore laziness so much, the comfort and the convenience, that they're willing to take shortcuts. I have a friend who is an HR assistant, vice president of a national human resources company, or a company, and she is the assistant vice president of human resources. And every time I get a chance to sit down with her and talk, I say, tell me another human resources story. And you wouldn't believe the stuff that is happening. And I remember one time she told me the story. She goes, oh, it's funny you should ask that. This week, I was just sitting in an office with an executive vice president who was turning in their keys, packing up his office, and was escorted out of the building after a 25-year career by the cops, security, because of an illicit sexual relationship with a direct report employee. Whole career. Salary, integrity, all of it gone. Why? Because somewhere in the secrets of his own heart, what it was that thrilled his heart and astonished his heart was something God had created. Physical gratification. Something that God had created to remind us that there is a Creator who is worth all of our life. But nothing he created is worth throwing away more meaningful things. And when those things have captured the heart of somebody, it damages their life. In some cases, destroys their life. So, number one, if you are chronically dissatisfied, you have probably misplaced your awe. If you are chronically dissatisfied, you have misplaced your awe. And this happens for people who are overly ambitious over material stuff, right? When someone is ambitious to get more and more material things, they spend lots of their money acquiring piles of material stuff. And to afford that ever-increasing pile, what does somebody have to do? They have to work more. And in working more, they have to engage and embrace more stress. And in order to do that, you have to say no to some other more meaningful things. And in some cases, while acquiring more material stuff, forfeiting and sacrificing the most meaningful parts of being in a part of a family or anything else that rewards us in our lives. And in some cases, people will attach their identity to those things, their inner sense of peace, and when spending too much time collecting and maintaining those things, sure, their house might be big, they might have all kinds of luxurious things to enjoy, but you'll be surrounded by beautiful things. But it's quite possible that your contentment in areas that really matter will be small. So what if it's possible that some of the things that you're unhappy with, dissatisfied with, find yourself complaining about or miserable in, what if it's possible that it really isn't the situation, it's that in your heart of hearts that you have displaced your awe? You are no longer astonished and you're no longer taken by. You are no longer able to adore and affectionately express that kind of thrill to the Father who is glorious and who is ever living. And as a result, every other circumstance in our life is dissatisfying. Number two, to reveal the source of your awe, here's what you have to do. It's got to be very specific. In order to discover what the source of our awe is, there's a whole series of things we can ask ourselves. Or we can remember, we can think back on, and here's what it is. What angers you or crushes you with disappointment? When you think about the last time you lost it, you came off the rails and lashed out at somebody. When you really got angry, what was it about? You know what that does? It helps us identify where our heart is finding its awe. What we want, what we desire, what we feel we're entitled to. Here's another question. What makes you think is worth, like your life is worth living? When do you say, this is so satisfying, this life is so worth living? And conversely, or in contrast, what causes you to feel like your life is a waste? Another question you might ask yourself, what are you willing to make sacrifices for? When you think about the sacrifices in your time, you think about the sacrifices that you've made financially, you think about some of the energy sacrifices you've made, what are those things that you're willing to sacrifice for? And what is it in your life that just doesn't seem worth the effort? It's quite possibly that if you look closely and if you do a little honest inspection of your own heart, at your highest joys or at your deepest sorrows, here's what you're going to find. You're going to find where it is you're reaching to find that awe for your own heart, the thrill of your own heart. Take anger, for example. When you think about the last time you really got angry, think about it, right? You think about what it was that caused that anger. Most people would say, Pastor, if I was honest, it isn't really advancing the kingdom of God and frustrations. It really is advancing my own kingdom frustrations. It's my own comforts that were, or my own conveniences, or my own entitlement. I feel entitled to some things to be treated a certain way, and I'm not, and it made me very angry. I mean, when somebody is in the house slamming the cabinets, and they're lashing out at people, and you get the chance to say, what in the world is wrong? There's no doubt in my mind that they're not going to say, can you believe that last Sunday after service, Pastor Dan makes this invitation to put your trust in Jesus, and nobody responds. And I've had enough of that. I'm praying for our neighbors whose marriage is on the it's on the fritz, and it's going to go one way or the other, and I just found out that they're splitting up, and it makes me so angry. See, our hearts are typically angered by the sources of awe in our own hearts as it relates to building our own kingdom. And that's the way we discover in our own lives. That's the way we discover where our greatest joys are and where our deepest sorrows are, that reveals to us the source of awe in our lives. And by the way, if there's someone in your house slamming cupboards and lashing out because people aren't turning to Jesus and believing and receiving, would you tell me? I'd be so encouraged by that. Something you think will bring you contentment, satisfaction, and happiness in you. Where you look for awe, listen to this, it'll fundamentally control the thoughts and emotions of your heart in ways you normally don't even realize. On a monthly basis, our church family is together on a Sunday morning, and we remember. And what we remember is, in the words of Jesus, we remember his broken body and his shed blood. And here's the reason we do that. Because if we don't remember, we completely lose track that the only one worth the adoration, the thrill, and the astonishment of our heart is the one who paid with his life. who lived the life we were supposed to live and died the death that we were deserving to die.